Welcome back to the Panthers podcast. Max Henson and Brian Strickland here with you. And Brian, it's been a while since we've been in the studio to do one of these things. Hopefully we've still got it.
Yeah, I think it's about as cold in the studio as it is outside this week.
Yep.
But there's hot topics to talk about, so that'll keep us warm.
There are. Yeah, last time we actually were here doing a podcast, we talked about, at that point, the rumors going around with the offensive coordinator situation for Carolina, and obviously that news became official when Ron Rivera made the change, going from Mike Shula, who had been here for five seasons as Carolina's OC, to Norv Turner, who's an old friend, an old colleague. They worked together in San Diego when Norv was the head coach and Ron was defensive coordinator for the Chargers. And Norv, who had taken a year away from football, comes back into the game to work for his friend Ron. And I guess, Brian, just your initial reaction. This is what was talked about immediately off the bat. Yeah. When it became clear Ron was in search for a new offensive coordinator. Everybody immediately looked at Norv Turner. So this isn't a surprise, but what's your just immediate reaction to Norv Turner stepping into this role for this team?
Yeah, I mean, that isn't a surprise. It's going to be interesting, of course, for those guys individually. Roles reversed in that, you know, Ron, in effect, used to work for Norv Turner. Now Norv Turner's working for Ron Rivera. I mean, it makes a lot of sense to me. You know, who knows if circumstances had been different, this could have happened, you know, years ago. I mean, Ron Rivera's offense is kind of, you know, bringing in Rob Chudzinski at first. You know, Chudzinski learned under Norv Turner, so it's kind of Norv Turner's offense, in effect, that in some form has been he's been around the league for 30 plus mm-hmm. years and had a lot of success. And so now it's kind of full circle, I guess, that the inventor of most of the basic concepts. Of course, Chudzinski, you know, made some changes. Mike Shula made some changes. But at the heart of it, I think, what was it? Norv Turner said 90% of the terminology is the same.
Yeah, a lot of carryover.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, and I think, you know, some people question that, thinking, is this going to be more of the same? You know, people that are down about what the offense did this past year. And mm-hmm. I understand, like, on the surface, people saying that. But, as you know, as Ron Rivera said up front, you know, he was happy with some of the things Mike Shula did. Certainly it was up and down. And so those concepts still fit with what Cam Newton can do well. But it is a new – even though it's, you know, somebody Panthers fans know all about and Ron Rivera knows all about, it is a new voice. And it's, you know, it's an innovator in this league who's bringing his little nuances to what the Panthers are already doing well. And, of course – you know, we don't know personnel-wise what he's going to be dealing with as well. It's not changes are not just going to stop with the coaching staff.
Yeah, no, that's all true. I think one thing about Norv too, and he pointed this out in his first kind of comments with us and the local media, is that, you know, he didn't invent the offense he runs.
Yeah,
you know, it's he doesn't like to say that it's his offense or what the Panthers were doing were Mike Shula's offense. It's essentially, a lot people are doing a lot of the same things.
Right.
It's just dressing it up a little bit differently and kind of what you prioritize and exactly how you want to use shifts, formations, and look, everybody does it a little bit differently. The goal is, of course, the same. You want to score points, and you want to rack up yards, and you want to be productive and consistent as an offense. And I think Norv's philosophy is what has been carried on throughout the Ron Rivera tenure in Carolina. You know, that's what Ron wanted to see in an offense after he left the Chargers. As you said, Brian, Chud kind of brought his own version of it. Then Shula kind of had his take on what Chud was doing. And it is interesting that now we go back to, like, the beginning of that with Norv Turner now being the one who's officially behind this offense, even if his fingerprints were just kind of on it before. I think you make a good point about what the concern out there is. You know, the fact that people maybe wanted to see a big change for this offense, and this is, you know, a move that doesn't scream change because there's a lot of similarities. But I think you hit the nail on the head. It's just having a different voice in that room, a guy of Norv Turner's experience level to work with a guy like Cam, as somebody who has mentored some really great quarterbacks throughout the course of his career. You think about Troy Aikman, Phillip Rivers, and Norv has been, you know, very clear about the fact that he thinks that there are some technique things that they can work on with Cam. And that's really been his biggest area for growth, right, is you've got this tremendous natural athlete that can do things improvisationally that other guys just simply can't even dream of. But when it comes to the rhythm and timing of the passing game, that's always been something that people have looked at Cam and said, if he were to get better in this area, imagine how good he could be.
Right, yeah, and I mean, that is good to hear. I know fans do like to hear that, you know, from a fundamental standpoint, from a mechanics standpoint, even though he didn't share specifics, he has some ideas on ways to work with Cam Newton. That's where the new voice comes in, where you have somebody new, you have somebody that's been around, had success, you know, giving you kind of this direction. He also, at the same time, you know, kind of he both admitted there's some things to work on, but also, you know, think some of that may be exaggerated as well. You know, you remember in the conference call, Max, he referenced that the throwing off the back foot thing that people talk about, you know, Cam's penchant for holding onto the ball as long as he possibly can to try to extend a play, and then there's no way to step up sometimes because there's no pocket for that. But he also acknowledged when it's a clean pocket that he wants to work on that with him. But also, I think an important thing in this is he's still going to let Cam be Cam in a lot of other ways because, you know, we talk about fundamentals and mechanics. You mentioned Phillip Rivers. I mean, he has one of the most unorthodox yep. throwing motions in the history of the NFL. He's probably going to be in the Hall of Fame, and Norv Turner did not try to change that.
Yeah.
So, you know.
The best coaches, right, are the ones that take the players they've got and what those players do best and maximize those.
Right.
You know, the coaching, if you're trying to take guys and force them into whatever mold you see as this is the only way it can be successful, and it's like, you know, you this quarterback may be great in some areas, but it's not exactly what I wanted as my offense, so I'm going to force him to kind of do it the way that I've always wanted it to be done.
Right.
You know, that's not exactly what you've always hear about being great coaching. You know, great coaching is, okay, here's what I've got, how do I get the most out of it? And I think that's the bottom line with Cam Newton is there are areas for him to improve, and we've talked about that. Norv Turner's offense has always been very detailed in the timing of it. And
right.
that goes beyond Cam. That goes a lot with the wide receivers and tight ends, everybody in the passing game. The timing of that is going to be very important going forward, and these players are going to find that out, I think, pretty quickly as they start going through practices with Norv. But I think a guy with Norv's experience level and certainly his expertise, and we're just kind of some talking heads at
right.
this point, just to, without anywhere near the kind of knowledge that a guy like Norv Turner has, but you've got somebody like Cam Newton, you're going to try to get the very best out of him. And if you're going to do that, that's going to involve some things that may be a little bit different than what Norv Turner has ever done before.
Right.
Because how many quarterbacks can do what Cam does in the run game? And I think that's really the big question, right, is how is Norv going to utilize this – you know, sports car he's got in Cam that,
yeah.
you know, you can really put the pedal to the metal with and do some things on the ground that nobody else in the league really can. I don't know. I think that's the big question is how much is he really going to utilize Cam in the power run game and the read option? We're so early into this, but that's the big question is, okay, how is he going to utilize Cam's unique talents in that way?
Right, we don't know that. I mean, the good news is from a starting point, though, and the reason that a Norv Turner-esque offense kind of worked with Cam Newton in the first place is they do align in some ways. Like, you know, stop me if you've heard this before from any coach, but it's not rocket science, but Norv Turner wants this, you know, to be able to run the ball, wants to be able to
yeah.
use the power running game, wants to, as Coach Rivera says a lot, wants to be able to run the ball even when they know you're going to run the ball. And, you know, Cam can be a part in that. I mean, he said, obviously, Cam's running game is always going to be a factor. Again, we don't know the details of how it's going to look, but he's an important part of the Panthers' running game, so that fits well with Norv Turner's philosophy of establishing that. And then, you know, Norv Turner likes to push the ball downfield as well,
mm-hmm.
vertical passing, and Cam Newton happens to be throw a very nice deep ball when given the time to throw
yep.
it. So,
yep, that's where those two strengths really mirror, I think, perfectly. And what Norv wants to do is take shots downfield. And as you said, for him, that's going to come off of establishing the run and taking your shots off play action,
right.
which we've heard Ryan over the course of the years always talk about. The offenses he's admired have done that.
Yeah.
That's just always been the way Ron has looked at really successful offenses, being, man, the way they run the ball, and the way they're able to take shots down the field off of that. And as you said, Cam's big strength, it doesn't – maybe get talked about as much as his athleticism and that kind of stuff, but the deep ball.
Right.
I mean, he's one of the best deep ball throwers in the NFL, and where he maybe isn't quite as accurate in some of those quick timing patterns, his ability to drop the ball in the bucket on some deep passes
yeah.
can be astounding at times. And I'm really curious to see how that is going to pair with what Norv, as we know, wants to do with kind of stretching defenses.
Right. Quickly. And that wasn't really in the cards for the team this year. I mean, of course, you go back to the Kelvin Benjamin trade, and part of that was get more speed on the field to stretch the defenses. It was almost more to create that threat because, you know, the reality is with guys not being able to stay healthy and everything, you didn't have a consistent threat that you could go too deep. So that's where part two of this whole thing is, of course, you've got Norv Turner here now, you've got Cam Newton now. Who are they going to be working with?
Yeah.
You know, Norv has hinted at that more than once about what personnel-wise is going to happen to this group over the course of the offseason.
Yeah, and as we get into the offseason now, some of those questions will slowly but surely start to get answered as far as building this roster and seeing what kind of pieces are put around Cam. Every year, the roster looks a little bit differently and things are going to change, so that's going to be what everybody is anxious to see is who are those weapons going to be and which guys are going to stay, which guys are going to go. You know, we've talked a lot about, you know, Cam and the passing game with Norv, and we've mentioned also the importance of the run game as it relates to a Norv Turner offense. Another big question I have is how are they going to establish that run game? Because one thing to talk about,
right. Okay,
we want to establish the run. Okay, that's great. Now, how are you going to do that? Because this past year with Carolina, it was Cam Newton who was the leading rusher for this team. I don't think that's what Norv Turner envisions as his method for consistently winning on the ground. I think he would like to have some of those power backs or a power back and a guy like Christian McCaffrey doing what he does best, carry that load for a run game. And sure, you want to mix Cam into that, and that's something that's going to be a part of this Panthers offense with Cam Newton at the helm. But I wonder how and who is going to be the one. Is Jonathan Stewart going to be
right. The
guy who's continues to be that kind of workhorse power back? Is it going to be somebody else? I mean, again, these offseason questions are ones we all want the answers to. But right now, that's one thing I do wonder about is if you want to create this consistent running game. It's a team that kind of struggled to run the ball,
right. Especially
with how successful it has always been doing that throughout the course of Ron Rivera's tenure here. So how exactly they go about doing it is going to be interesting. And of course, the offensive line plays a big part in that, too. And
right. What
is that line going to look like? Is Andrew Norwell going to be a part of this team going forward? There are a lot of things that will tie into that ultimately.
And that's what the offseason's all about, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's always change. You know, some big changes for the Panthers this offseason. But there's, you know, last year was the talk about evolving the offense and, you know, trying to make changes. Now they're trying to make changes through the coaching staff. I mean, will Cam be in the shotgun, you know, the large majority of the time like he has been, or we can see him under center some.
Yeah.
I mean, you got Stewart and Cameron Otis-Payne both under contract, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's correct. But there's the draft. There's free agency. I mean, part of that, too, is we won't know those answers for a while. I mean, we'll see moves made in the offseason that point us in a certain direction, but you know, they're also not going to spell out for the whole world this is exactly how we're going to make this work either. That's one of the advantages of kind of having a new coach is you have those new wrinkles that maybe at least for a little while the opponent doesn't see coming.
Yeah, and I'm curious also to see what those wrinkles are going to be as it relates to Christian McCaffrey, right?
Right.
I mean, this is the guy who prototypical Swiss Army knife that you think any offensive coordinator would be pretty excited. Ooh, there's so many different ways I can use this guy and different matchups I can create. Had a chance to talk to LaDainian Tomlinson, who played for Norv Turner a little while back, and he was just talking about how geeked he was just to see how he's going to use Christian and give him, you know, matchup situations where he can really take advantage of. It's something Mike Shula did, you know, and let's not forget that.
Right.
Mike Shula was also trying to do these kind of things, but you've got somebody else now who gets a crack at it, and to see the ways that he'll try to get Christian on the edge where he's comfortable in the run game and of course, in the passing game, a guy who had 80 catches as a rookie. Very interesting to see where he's going to take it in year two as far as the passing game in ways that he can be maybe more of an explosive playmaker for this offense. Because that was the thing that was seemingly lacking for Christian this past year, the explosive plays that you maybe hoped you'd see more of if you were a Panther fan.
Yeah, you saw obviously the end of the season with a long touchdown against the Saints was something
you
hope to see more over the course of the season, especially with the glimpses you saw that in the preseason. But the man ended up with 80 catches, I believe it was.
Crazy,
is still certainly productive. Interested how he'll be using the running game. You kind of already referenced that you know, there wasn't a consistency of success with Christian lined up in the backfield from a running standpoint. You know, does just, you know, the way Norv Turner operates things make make Christian McCaffrey a better runner, or is it somebody else? And Christian McCaffrey's more in that Darren Sproles-esque move. Of course, Tomlinson, you mentioned, was a guy that did it all, that did both extremely successfully under North Turner.
I think Christian's going to find a way to have some more success on the ground under North. I do think they're going to create opportunities for him to, every once in a while, between the tackles, get some carries, but just get him on the edge a little bit more and some misdirection stuff to try to get him into a rhythm on the ground, because he didn't seem to have that too often in his rookie year. Well, that's our conversation on the offensive side of the ball, but that's just one piece of this big, coaching change situation for the Panthers.
Right.
Of course, offensively, you had the change of coordinator, and there's a change of defensive coordinator as well, as Steve Wilks, after one season as Carolina's defensive coordinator, is off to Arizona to be head coach of the Cardinals. And for the Panthers, it's 2 years ago with Sean McDermott, who left to be the Buffalo head coach. The year after, it's Steve Wilks, who leaves for Arizona. And now Eric Washington, defensive line coach, steps in as defensive coordinator. Three different coordinators in three seasons.
Right.
Is something that sounds, not quite ideal, but much like on the offensive side of the ball, where there is a thread of continuity between all the coordinators, I think you could certainly say the same, if not more so, on the defensive side.
Yeah, Marty Herney down at the Senior Bowl this week said he thinks it'll be a seamless transition from Steve Wilks and Eric Washington. And I tend to agree. I feel like it was pretty seamless as well, Sean McDermott to Steve Wilks. And that's, because the defense will remain intact. Again, not that Eric Washington actually would put his own imprint on it, just like Steve Wilks did. I mean, Steve Wilks versus Sean McDermott was more aggressive with blitzing, mostly with success in that regard. Obviously, Eric Washington's defensive line coach has had a great success with the Panthers in that role. He certainly believes in the defensive line and the ability of what those guys can do. And, the bottom line is I think it'll be seamless because the players are on board. I mean, there's no doubt about that. Eric Washington, much beloved, just like the guys before him that were in that role. And these guys will be fired up to play for him just like they were for the previous guys. So then it's just, what is Eric Washington going to do to put his individual imprint on the group? And, he'll be starting with the same base as what the Panthers have done for years now on defense.
Yeah, and I think, we talked about on the offensive side of things, Brian, how, people may be wanting to see more change than there was. But I think you look at the defensive side too, and it's a great example of how even if coaches have similar philosophies and the similar kind of system, just having a different play caller can change things so drastically. Like you look at Sean and Steve Wilks.
Right.
Those two guys very much kind of came from the same background as far as their beliefs and growing in as coaches. It's just kind of what their kind of system and values were. Sean and Steve ran very similar systems, but Steve had his own kind of tweaks to it. There's a little more man coverage played, and he blitzed a whole lot more.
Yeah.
And that's simply just the guy up in that booth making the calls is going to have a big impact on what that defense looks like. The defense for Carolina looked very different this past year than it did under Sean, with the aggressiveness of the blitzing versus Sean being a little bit more conservative and playing a little more zone coverage. So, and I think that can apply to the offensive side, too. Even if a guy runs a very similar system, just the fact of a play caller being different can make things look a whole lot different.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately, you're prepping for those Sundays where you get however many plays you can call. And in those critical moments, that's how you're really going to be defined, is what the call is going to be on that critical 3rd and 8 with the game on the line.
Yeah, and as we go into the Eric Washington era on that side, the other thing that's the same as on offense is, things weren't perfect last season on defense. It's not truly going to be status quo, regardless of whether it's that lineage from one guy to the other. And there are questions for the defense to answer. And Eric Washington plays a big role in them now, clearly with his new role. But some of it is above his pay grade, so to speak, as well, because of personnel things. And, the Panthers will spend the next few months looking at the areas of concern from this past season. Certainly, the secondary had an up and down year and didn't feel like they finished the year very strong. Is that an area that they address? What happens with Eric Washington's group up front? Obviously Julius Peppers is going to be a topic of this offseason.
Yes, he will, yep.
Set to potentially become a free agent / potentially retire. And what does he do? I know him and Eric Washington certainly clicked. They did for the year they were together in Chicago, and it seemed like you know, if anything, I don't know what you think, Max, if anything, this maybe gives me more hopes that
Peppers
will decide to play another year.
Yeah, just the fact that Eric is sticking around. And, you know, I think that's it's certainly got to help the cause.
Right.
And speaking of that, you know, just the fact that Eric is sticking around, you know, there was a big, you know, business decision made by the Panthers brass to ensure that Eric was going to be available for them if Steve left. You know, weeks before Steve Wilks ultimately was named the head coach of the Cardinals, you know, they had a deal in place with Eric where if Steve left,
right,
Wilks was promoted to defensive coordinator. And they had Eric sign that contract and put themselves in a spot where he would be there for them if Steve were to leave. And I thought that was just a huge move and such a smart one for somebody,
right,
like Eric, who the Panthers have felt for a while now is the best D-line coach in football. And obviously someone who said that quite a bit was Steve Wilks throughout the course of the year.
Right.
And you would think that Steve very much would have been interested in the possibility of saying to Eric, hey, I'm heading to Arizona to be a head coach. How do you feel about being my defensive coordinator?
Right.
So the Panthers had to, you know, protect themselves,
yep,
and do what was best for them. And a guy like Eric, who is thought of so highly by players, coaches around the league, he's a kind of one of those rising stars in the coaching ranks. I thought it was some pretty good business there by the Panthers to keep the guy around who they wanted leading their defense if Steve were to depart.
No doubt. And I mean, but another thing that speaks to the quality of the staff, you know, like what Steve Wilks was able to do. I mean, there still could be more changes on the defensive side of the ball because,
yeah,
Steve Wilks, you know, it's kind of out there that he's interested in Al Holcomb,
absolutely,
the Panthers,
yeah,
linebackers coach, possibly for his role, the role as his first defensive coordinator in,
right,
Arizona. And again, if anything, I mean, change is tough. It is, but it speaks to the quality of the defensive staff. But
doesn't it? I mean, just, yeah, think about like the 15 season coaching staff now. So you have, you know, Ron Rivera's head coach, obviously,
right,
one of the better defensive coaches in the league. Sean McDermott at that time was defensive coordinator, now a head coach. Secondary coach was Steve Wilks, now a head coach. Eric Washington, a defensive coordinator now. And if Al Holcomb becomes,
right,
one. I mean, think about the guys, like, just on the defensive side of the ball who had defensive coordinating experience that were all,
right,
on that staff. It's that's kind of cool to think about. And Ron Rivera certainly deserves a bit of credit there for,
yeah,
constructing a staff with,
right,
that many talented coaches and for helping these guys, you know, move along in their careers.
But also for retaining guys that put the defense still in a good position. And you have Ron Rivera, you know, certainly Marty Herney again down in the Senior Bowl mentioning, hey, you know, this is one of the best defensive coaches in the league as,
mm-hmm,
well, Ron Rivera, who kind of got this whole thing started. I mean, it's fascinating, Max, because it feels – everything feels like there's so much change going on. And there is.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it creates this almost feeling like, you know – There were big struggles last year. I'm not saying last year turned out the way
it's 11-5 football team.
It was,
yeah,
an 11-5 team,
yeah,
undergoing a lot of change. Some of it just has to happen because of success. I don't know that people think of it that way. They think like they're kind of having to make changes,
mm-hmm,
here where things aren't going well. But this team's gone to playoffs for the last 5 years, and within this change, Ron Rivera is the rock of it, and then they've managed to still have continuity even within the change. When you look at Norv Turner on offense, obviously we've already talked about, you know, that is, you know, there's some continuity there, even though he's never coached for the Carolina,
right,
Panthers. And obviously on defense, with what we're talking about with the trickle down effect, you're bringing, and continuity is a word I haven't heard Coach Rivera use yet this offseason, but we know that's a big thing on a team that's successful, that you want to keep,
right,
you know, some familiar elements. And the Panthers are managing to do that despite all the changes that are going on.
Yeah, and that's part of Ron's job description, you know, as the head coach and CEO, so to speak, of all things with that football team and that coaching staff. One of the things you've got to do is prepare yourself for the future. And if you've got coaches on your staff who, you know, are really good at what they do and people are going to come calling if they have success and the team has success, okay, who's that next guy going to be?
Right.
And Ron has clearly, you know, shown that he's done that. When it was Sean, it was Steve's turn. And now when Steve left, it was Eric's turn. And it's not like this just the snap of fingers a guy turns into somebody who you think, okay, he can step into that role. Both Steve and Eric presented in Sean's meeting room,
right,
from time to time. And they were given the opportunity to go up there and kind of get their feet wet, get comfortable with being in front of the room, addressing the defense as a whole. They were given that kind of responsibility. And that's the kind of planning and foresight that you've got to have as a head coach, knowing that, yeah, as you said, 4 playoff seasons in 5 years. Okay, some teams who aren't in the playoffs are going to come looking for coaches.
Right.
And
yeah.
It might be us. And in that case, you've got to be prepared for that. And the Panthers have put themselves in a position to, as you said, have that continuity despite these teams coming after their coaches to give them more opportunity.
And, of course, this is just one piece of the puzzle too, Max. We've been coach-heavy today, and understandably so. That's one part of it. You know, I think the Panthers' new coaching staff, so to speak, is shaping up nicely. Soon we'll turn our attention to the players and obviously what the roster looks like. Ultimately, it's the players that have to take what the coaches teach them and apply them on game day. And, I guess we're kind of beginning that phase now, if you think about it, Max. Mm-hmm. I've mentioned the Senior Bowl a couple times. It's draft season. Are you ready? Are you ready for mock draft season?
Are we ever really ready? That's the thing. I don't think we were ever really ready for that. And this year, with the Panthers at 24 – last year, picking in the top 10, you had a little bit more of a sense earlier on for what that maybe those top 10 guys were going to be or were going to look like. Of course, Christian was one who was early in the process, was late first,
right,
early second maybe guy, and then slowly throughout the offseason, and especially once the combine came, it was like, oh, boy. This guy put on a show in Indy. Now he's in the top half of the first round. Oh, now he's in the top 10. So he made that climb. But him aside, the top 10 is just a little bit more, you can kind of zero in on. For the Panthers at 24, at this point, who knows?
Right.
Who knows what's going to happen and who's going to be available, how the medicals will check out, and what's going to happen in front of them by the time we get to draft day with any trades. So, a lot of people enjoy this part of the process. The draft season, there are tons of draft nicks out there now, but there's just so much to even begin to think about, where they might be looking. We're a long ways off from that.
You're not going to go ahead and tell people who the Panthers are going to pick at 24, Max?
No, I'm not. One of the other interesting things about this offseason for the Panthers, in addition to all this coaching changes and getting all that ready, is, Marty Herney.
Yeah.
Now, he's now the guy kind of driving the bus for the Panthers' evaluation process here. And for a few years, it had been Dave Gettleman, and we had kind of gotten into a bit of a rhythm and routine with Dave, kind of knew what to expect from him and how he approached things and kind of what his philosophies were. Marty, of course, did this before for this team, but it's been a while, and he's kind of come at this with a bit of a different perspective in his own right. I'm curious to see how he handles this process and kind of what we find out about what he's going to prioritize in the weeks and months ahead.
Yeah, I was here for the end of the Marty Herney era, part one. Number one pick is a little different than the number 24 pick. Obviously, he used the number one pick on Cam Newton. Then the next year, the number 9 pick on Luke Kuechly.
Not bad.
Pretty good track record there. Like we said, you never know how it's going to play out. Certainly the potential that somebody that he and the scouting staff evaluate as a top 10 talent falls to 24. And then, part of the reason I point that out is you're talking about philosophy. He does tend to have the best available player philosophy, like Dave Gettleman did as well. And especially picking that deep in the first round, I think you do look for the possibility of somebody falling that you wouldn't think would, that's worthy of, like I said, maybe even a top 10 pick ending up at 24. For him, but it's the depth of the draft is important as well. And, I actually heard Dave Gettleman, say this the other day, or maybe actually we're looking back at old interviews the other day, and he referenced, that the draft's an educated guess. Mm-hmm. So none of these guys are going to bat 1,000. I'll preface all this with that. That's just the reality of the NFL draft. But I'm sure, the subsequent rounds are very important for the Panthers this year, with so many areas that you could point to as, needing help. And, Herney's track record when he was here before in the latter rounds, again, hindsight is 20/20, but it wasn't quite as successful as Luke Kuechly and Cam Newton. So the depth of the draft as well. But Marty Herney puts everything he has into the draft. He lights up when you talk about the draft.
You can tell the excitement in his voice just here. Mike Kraft's interview with him down in Mobile. And, you could tell Marty lives for that. Draft season and scouting these guys and evaluating. And much like Dave Gettleman in that respect.
Right.
Dave was a guy who, what did he always tell? Put a clicker in my hand and let me watch that tape.
Right.
That's my happy place. And you can tell that Marty is very much you know, a scout and evaluator at heart too. And he really enjoys this part of the job.
And I think he maybe looks at value pretty strongly. Like, you know, guys, the thing I said about guys dropping, you know, I think sometimes, you know, Dave Gettleman, his clicker evaluations would be like, we have to have this guy sometimes. And we talked about this sometimes, Max.
Or
you know.
Not maybe that we had to have this guy, but this guy is, you know, you can only be taken at this at this point. You know, there are certain benchmarks values placed that Dave was very strong about
where
he felt like this is where this player is graded. You know, we talked... Yeah. You know, in that 15 draft with Devin Funchess, you know, they felt like that board was getting picked clean. Mm-hmm. There wasn't anybody worth that second round pick that they felt was going to be left.
Right.
Other than, you know, a guy like Devin Funchess. They went up and got him because they felt like if they waited, man, we've got nobody here that we value at this point. So you're right. Dave did kind of structure things in a way where he was had very concrete values he placed on players.
I think that's a strength for Marty Herney from what I remember is that, you know, he will look at things in a way where it's like, yeah, we have a second round grade on this guy, but I don't know if other people have a second round grade on this guy. And he might be willing to take a little more of a chance that this guy might be there in the third round, even though we think that. You know, and there's just different philosophies. That's kind of, you know, small. And we never really even know how that plays out, to be honest, Max, because it's hard to ever get the true story on where people had guys slotted and that type of thing. But I think he's willing to do that, maybe to roll the dice a little bit and say, you know, there's a group of guys here. I'm going to take a chance that this guy will be available in the third round and pass on him here in the second. Yeah. And sometimes that works out. Sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. As you said, you hear a lot of things. Finding out the truth this time of the NFL season is difficult because you hear so much about this team liking this guy. Tell me if you've heard this before, Brian. Players, prospects being asked, which teams have you been talking to?
Oh, really?
So, you know, down at the Senior Bowl, this is all starting to get underway. Of course, the East-West Shrine Game at all.
Yeah, the Panthers talked to Josh Allen, Wyoming quarterback, by the way. Did you hear that, Max?
I had not heard that. Yeah. I have a feeling they're going to talk to a lot of guys.
Right,
so that's a good guess. But, yeah, that's part of what makes it fun, too, is trying to figure out, okay, where does the truth lie? What does this team or who does this team value? And as they go through this process, we'll start to get a better feel for it. But I know that's always something you thoroughly enjoy, Brian, is kind of reading the tea leaves and and kind of seeing,
it's
you know, one of our jokes in the office, too, is we'll hear what maybe like 35 guys are going to be top 10 picks.
Yep,
you know, I don't know how that math always ends up working out.
And then, of course, we get to the nitty-gritty breakdowns of individuals and their heavy
hands. That's right. We're going to hear a lot more about heavy hands.
Twerky hips.
Not twerky. You got some fluid hips is the one for that.
Yeah, okay. Sorry about that. It's always fun, right? It's like a little cottage industry there, the mock draft and the
it absolutely is
awesome terminology people come up to describe some of these guys.
Yeah, you know, the hand size, you've got all these different things, the lengths at which it's gone to, and that fans are getting the information. This information's always been there for, you know, the front offices, but now the fact that fans are even interested in so much of this stuff, to be with the hand size and all these different times and all these different drill. I mean, it's I think there are fans out there who enjoy the draft more than any part of the season.
Right.
Is just that this whole process of the merging of college football and pro football and kind of building a team through the draft. The draft Knicks, I mean, it seems like there are more and more of them each year.
Yeah, I mean, and it is entertaining. We're having a little fun with it, but we get into it as well. And come draft night, you know, we'll be sitting there watching guys we kind of have on our minds for whatever reason and wondering if they're going to make it to 24.
Yeah, you'll be able to tell us which linemen are real knee benders and which ones are a little stiff. So.
I might not be able to do that, but I can tell you what others said about that type of thing. So there'll be plenty of opinions out there, that's for sure.
That's absolutely sure. Well, I think this is pretty good, Brian, to get back into the swing of things here. A lot to talk about with the coaching staff and getting into the draft season. But I will say this about the draft, and this is another one we're stopping if you've heard this before. It's a big draft for this team.
Yeah.
It feels like to try to add some talent to a roster that has a really good core. And as Marty Herney also said down in the Senior Bowl, it feels like this team could have gone a little bit further maybe this year, disappointed with how the season ended, coming off an 11-5 year. You know, if they take another step forward, you know, you're looking at maybe a 12-13 win team that's really in a position to contend.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he will value – okay, well, this is obvious. you're going to get younger through the draft, right? That tends to be how it happens. But, you know, a little injection of youth and I think speed and athleticism will be buzzwords for the Panthers this year's draft. And but, you know, then there's the big guys up front as well. I mean, it's going to be a fun journey to that point. And, you know, the bottom line in all this, I feel like, is that the Panthers are starting from a good place. And even with all the change that's happening around them, they are coming off an 11-5 season. They have the nucleus coming back. They have continuity within the coaching staff, even within the change. So, I mean, a lot of teams in the league can kind of be jealous of where the Panthers are going into 2018.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Just getting things started with the draft coverage, as you said, our guys down in Mobile from Panthers TV, again, just some Senior Bowl coverage, and just beginning now. We'll have pro days and stuff coming up soon. It's the Combine in Indianapolis. So that's all getting started. Our mock draft reports will be soon returning to Panthers.com. Brian, I know you love that as well. And also, of course, stay tuned for news on the coaching staff. I mean, we talked about the coordinators, offensive and defensive, those guys, but filling out the staff is another thing that's, you know, potentially coming up on both sides of the ball, just to see what that staff as a whole is going to look like heading into the 2018 season. And on that note, I think that's going to do it for us, Drew.
Yeah, I don't have anything else to say, Max.
I think we've said it all.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe next time we'll have something to say about food. I know our foodie fans out there.
Well, when you mentioned the Combine, I did think about some of my favorite indie places to eat immediately. So, you know me.
Yeah. All right, we'll bring that to you next time right here on the Panthers Podcast.